Near FM.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome along to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Now to begin in a few moments' time, the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave, where we discuss some of today's business headlines.
In the business of this week, Jack McGuinness, MD of Indico, talks about his business, which has really come of age due to COVID-19 pandemic. His business is all about the vital range of high-end infection control paints, cleaners and other important sanitising agents, and he'll be here shortly to tell me more.
In our weekly radio column this week, Jenny Tyrrell tells us about what's happening for National Women's Enterprise Day, which is today.
Every quarter we get an update on the latest local property market here in North Dublin, so that means Ronan Crinian from MoveHome.ie, estate agents in Drumcondra and Cable Street, will be here with me later.
And finally then, David Bell from the HR department is here for our regular look at HR issues. This week we look at different management styles and how they can affect a company's performance. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or indeed comment on any of the stories that we have on the programme today, you can get in touch with the show by text while we're on the air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
News Desk on Nearby Business.
So, Dave, a couple of interesting stories in the headlines today. The ESRI warns of overheating in the economy as growth for the economy is forecast.
Yeah, the government risks overheating the economy if it fails to keep a tight rein on spending in the post-COVID period. The Economic and Social Research Institute has warned. Ahead of next week's budget, the think tank said the increased government expenditure in areas such as housing, climate change and healthcare was coinciding with a period of rapid growth in the domestic economy, and this could add to existing capacity pressures. In its latest quarterly assessment, the ESRI said the Irish economy would register a robust 12.6% growth this year and 7.1% next year on the back of a resurgence in consumer spending and a further acceleration in exports. The stronger than expected performance will ease pressure on the public finances, it said, while leading to a significant reduction in unemployment. Unemployment is expected to fall to 9% this year, down from a pandemic high of 31% in April 2020. However, the rapid bounce back combined with increased public investment in infrastructure posed a significant risk of overheating, he said. Overheating occurs when demand exceeds the productivity capacity of the economy, bidding up prices and wages and eroding competitiveness.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Growth can bring its problems as well.
Yeah.
Now, the Fraud Smart organisation has reported €15.6 million in scams.
Yeah, this is all the phone calls you're getting and people ringing up and saying they're pretending the bank and the other thing.
Yeah,
the number of scams targeting consumers jumped by almost 80% in 2020 as the fraudsters took advantage of the uncertainties and unfamiliar situations prompted by the COVID crisis. New figures from the banking industry show victims were conned out of $15.6 million. That's a 51% higher sum than the year before, according to FraudSmart. Now, FraudSmart is a fraud awareness initiative led by Banking and Payments Federation Ireland. It said victims of fraud such as impersonation scams, romance scams, don't know if you fall for any of them, Declan?
Not yet, anyway, no.
Investment scams were tricked out of an average of €5,300 per scam. It reported It highlighted a sharp increase in impersonation scams as fraudsters have sought to exploit the upheaval caused by the pandemic. The scams occur when a fraudster pretends to be from a legitimate organisation or business to get sensitive information or money from the victim. More than two-thirds of the consumers reported being targeted by some form of impersonation scam in the 12 months to July 2021.
So. Yeah, it's crazy the amount of them, certainly, that I'm getting. I'm sure you're getting them as well. Be alert for them. Now, we were talking a lot over the last couple of weeks about returning to the office, and people are starting to do that now. But office rentals as well rise sharply as COVID restrictions are easing.
Yeah, this is happening in the third quarter of the year after the loosening of the restrictions turned the attention to the post-pandemic work environment. The Jones Lang LaSalle, which tracks the Dublin office market deals, found a take-up of office space in the three months to the end of September was almost 4,200 square feet, a significant rise on the 45,000 square feet in the first quarter in 2016. A total of 43 deals were recorded in the last quarter, although a three-month period was still down on the previous average quarterly volumes. Later in the programme, we'll be joined by Ronan for an update on the property market from movehome.ie. And finally, in the news desk this week, a cabinet meeting this evening, as we speak, is expected to raise corporation tax to 15%. Now, don't worry about this for the small guys around there. This is for companies with a turnover greater than 750 million. I'm just slightly under
slightly under that,
so we'll be okay.
You'll be all right for another while.
The Business of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Okay, in the business of this week, Jack McGuinness, MD of Indicoat Coatings, talks to us about his business, which recently came of age due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And his business is all about a vital range of high-end infection control paints, cleaners and other important sanitising agents. And he's here now sitting beside me in person to discuss those. Jack, you're very welcome to Nearby Business. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Dave.
Now, tell us the story of Jack McGuinness.
Well, Jack McGuinness has 40 years' experience in what we call the coatings industry, which covers both printing inks and all aspects of domestic and industrial coatings. And about 6 years ago, Mike Frankhausen, who's the MD of Indicoat, which is based in Holland, gave me a ring and asked me would I be interested in taking on the agency for his products in Ireland, and as it transported, some parts of the UK as well. And when I started talking to Mike, I became interested basically because he specialises in what we call antimicrobial paint systems. It covers three different aspects of antimicrobial coatings. One is the anti-mould, which one sees in bathrooms and areas where you have leaks or condensation or bad ventilation. And the other area is antibacterial, which we find in hospitals, care homes, etc. And then the other one is anti-algae, which is seen on the outside of buildings, particularly north-facing buildings, where you get this green or black growth on the side of buildings, which is unsightly. We had a chat and we decided that we would go with it. Certainly over the first 3 or 4 years of the business, we ended up doing a lot of business with Dublin City Council, who use our paint in their social housing units to control mould. Mould is a particularly dangerous organism insofar as we come across an awful lot of houses, social housing, where we have children who are suffering from asthma. And because mold spores are airborne, when the children start inhaling these, they end up getting respiratory problems, and it exacerbates the asthma problem that they have, which could lead to hospitalisation. Because we have, a number of companies would turn around and sell a paint where they would advocate that it's all-encompassing, whereby you can fight mold and bacteria with the same coating. We're not of that opinion, because when we found that when you incorporate two different aspects of antimicrobial control, you end up with getting the least benefit from all of the problems you have. So we have a particular product for mold, a particular product for bacteria, and a particular product for algae.
Okay, so the sectors then, you mentioned Dublin City Council, so that would be probably buildings that would be refurbished on a regular basis if a turnover of clients or a turnover of tenants. So, and they wouldn't necessarily be new buildings, probably not the best insulation.
Correct.
Would the advice be then to clean this all up and apply it, or can it be applied directly on?
No, basically one of the problems that we've come across is that a lot of treatment is just basically somebody going in and spraying the black mould that you see in your kitchen area. Bathroom with bleach, wiping it down, and then putting a coat of paint over the top of it. From our experience, mould, as I said, is airborne. So if one has a mould problem in a room, the entire room has to be treated. And we insist on going in and putting a mould killer in the entire room, leaving for 24 hours to make sure all the spores are dead, cleaning down the residue spores that are there, and then putting a coating onto the walls. Right. And that prevents the regrowth of the mould.
Yeah, and obviously we've heard all about PPE and all that stuff recently. So hospitals must be an area that this product will be used.
We would like to think so. Certainly it's a huge market in Europe, whereby we have painted operating theatres, care homes, hospital wings. We don't seem to be getting the traction here in Ireland yet, but hopefully in the future people will realise that if you're going to paint a room, irrespective of whether it's a hospital room or your kitchen or bathroom, why not use a paint that you're going to get an extra kick from, which is the antibacterial or the anti-mould
Yeah, and the pharmaceutical industry as well, I'm sure, will be an area that...
Anywhere. We have done numerous variety of different industries. We a huge market in the horse racing game.
Okay.
Whereby the horses who are being stabled for 23 hours, they don't want them inhaling mold spores, or they don't want bacteria being transferred from one horse to another in a racing yard or in a so, yes, we've had a huge amount of interest in that. We painted stalls across the UK... in all the big yards in Ireland, we've done the Curragh Racecourse, and we've painted stalls in Dubai for the Sheikh. So it's a huge business. The problem is that we found that it appears that a horse's life is worth more than a human's life.
Yes.
Insofar as
that's a good
the market is not where it should be.
Yeah, well, you hear the horse having a wind operation or having a cough or something like that. So hopefully your product will prevent the cough anyway.
It's not a silver bullet, but it'll certainly reduce the cross infection, and that's what we're all talking about now with COVID, is cross infection.
Yeah.
And if this limits the cross infection in a room or a hospital or a hotel. It should be used, because you're going to paint your room anyhow, so why not paint it with our paint?
Okay, just when you said that there, you brought me to the next question. Is this available in the basic gold colours of grey and white, or can you get anything?
John Keogh, who is came on board in January, and he's actually an applicator or a painter and decorator.
Yeah.
And what he will do is, if Mrs. Murphy wants her room painted in whatever colour she wants, we sell it in a basic white, but we can then take that white and tint it to whatever colour you want.
White, so they can colour trend it or match colour, match it to suit the application. Yeah, just going back to the hospital situations then, and the specifications and the EN regulations in that area, are the paints will be compliant to that sort of thing, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We have both it independently tested across Europe, and testimonials from hospitals, professors, surgeons, to say that what we actually provide is, and we're providing this with a customer that we're about to do a job for, if you think you have a problem, we can bring our people in, test the room, swab the room, come up with reports on what exactly is wrong with your room as far as the genre or the gene of the mold or the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
We will provide a report, and then we will go in and paint your room. After that, if you want, over a period of 6 months or a year, we can then come in and do further tests just to show that the bacterial count is minimised relative to it not being painted.
Okay, so we're all about local business here, because we're a nearby business. You are based on the north side of Dublin.
Yes, we are,
if anybody's listening or companies involved want to partake in purchasing our product, how do they go about that?
They could ring me. My number is on the website, indicote.ie. They're more than welcome to ring us, talk us through potential issues that they have. We will come in and do a survey of their potential problems, and then we will provide them with a report of what we feel is the right way to address that.
Yeah, and how do you see the future going for this kind of product?
We would like to see, we'd like to think that food processing, pharmaceutical offices that require or are now thinking about bringing their people back, having been out for 6 months. And it's, in my opinion, it's important that these offices and organisations provide a safer environment than was available to them prior to COVID.
Mm.
And what we're advocating is that if you're bringing people back, you should be looking at painting your rooms with an antibacterial paint to provide that extra bit of insurance for your clients or your customers or your employees when they come back to start working in offices.
Thank you. Jack McGuinness, thank you for coming to talk to us on Nearby Business,
Indicote.ie.
Thank you very much for telling us all about it.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Declan.
Thanks, Jack, and thanks, Dave, as well. Now, in our weekly radio column this week, Jenny Tyrrell tells us about what's happening for National Women's Enterprise Day, which, believe it or not, is today.
Taking care of business on Nearby Business.
Today, the 7th of October, is National Women's Enterprise Day. The Local Enterprise Office initiative, supported by the Government of Ireland, is now in its 15th year, and this year's tagline is Build the Future, with the hashtag NWED. This year we'll see the event online again after a challenging 18 months, and it's free and open to anyone. Vibeke Delahunt, co-chair of the event committee, said, "Now that we've hopefully moved beyond lockdowns and our economy is finally reopening, we want to help women come together to learn from each other and to learn from experts on how to strengthen their business into the future. Thanks to the online-only format, attendees can get as much as possible out of the event without being restricted by location, a setup that proved incredibly successful last year. Rather than running 31 separate events, one for each local enterprise office, in 2020 they had one national event online. It went down so well, with around 1,600 participants, they decided to stick with the same format for 2021. Hosted by entrepreneur and broadcaster Anya Kerr, the co-founder of KinZen and host of RTE's Reignite, and attended by some of Ireland's most inspiring female entrepreneurs and businesswomen, today's conference was a day of inspiration and learning and how women can build their future in business and what they need to get there. Their mission is to help strengthen women's business skills for the future, to guide existing female-led business, as well as help women looking to take their first steps into entrepreneurship through a series of talks and advice clinics. The event is a testament to the amount of women who are in business today in Ireland. With various sessions, a lunchtime energizer, and workshops throughout the day, each session featured keynote speakers and contributors from a huge range of business sectors, such as beauty and cosmetics, clothing, IT, finance, and even winemaking. The topics of interest range from ideas, innovation, and action, get to know your numbers, trading online, practical steps in sustainability, and new markets. Liz Hoare, Wexford County Council's Head of Enterprise, said, "The last 18 months has presented significant challenges. However, the responsiveness and ability of female entrepreneurs to adapt, exploit new opportunities, and forge new paths is commendable. Historically, women entrepreneurs have often faced an uphill battle when it comes to receiving funding and investment. According to Crunchbase, global VC funding to women-founded companies fell significantly in 2020 to 2.3% compared to 2.8% in 2019. In the first half of this year, Irish tech startups raised a record €932 million, but funding for companies with women founders declined from 11% of the total to just 6%. In May last year, a survey from Early Stage Venture Fund and Seed Accelerator 500 Startups also found that two-thirds of women founders believe they would be disproportionately affected by COVID-19 compared to their male peers. State agency Enterprise Ireland, chaired by Heather Humphreys, Minister for Business, Enterprise, Innovation, launched its action plan for women in business on the 7th of January 2020, following on from commitment by government to the Balance for Better Business initiative launched in 2018. This included plans to increase the number of women in strategic management positions and a new focus on their approach to attaining greater gender balance in Irish companies and entrepreneurship. The strategy is underpinned by four key objectives: increasing the number of women-led companies growing internationally, increasing the number of women in middle and senior management and leadership roles in Irish companies, increasing the number of women becoming entrepreneurs, and increasing the number of women-led startups with high growth potential. We know there are multiple factors contributing to the underrepresentation of women in this space. More frequently than not, they are interrelated and complex. The underrepresentation of women both as founders and as business leaders is particularly pronounced in certain industry sectors such as manufacturing, ICT, engineering, and construction. In addition, the proportion of women CEOs is significantly lower in larger companies, and at senior management level, women are less likely to be in strategic roles. International research has established that increased gender diversity in senior management and on boards leads to better decision making, improved productivity, and increased profitability. Women make up more than 50% of our population and are underrepresented across the spectrum of economic activity. In particular, there is a 12% gender gap in labour force participation rate. Only 30% of senior managers are women. Less than 20% of CEOs are women, falling to 9% in larger companies. And Ireland has the highest gender gap in self-employment in the EU. Less than 10% of VC funding is going to companies with female founders, and only 3% of angel investors are women. Julie Cinnamon, CEO of Enterprise Ireland, said, "Harnessing the full talent and expertise of our diverse population will result in better businesses and faster economic growth. Unleashing the creativity and skills of more women represents an unparalleled opportunity for fueling economic growth in Ireland." Enterprise Ireland have a number of supports and initiatives to help female entrepreneurs under their High Potential Startup or HPSU division, where they support client companies to start, scale, and grow in international markets. A High Potential Startup is defined as a new startup venture and can access other funding programs such as their Competitive Start Fund or CSF. Figures from Tech Ireland earlier this year show that women founded startups and scale-ups in Ireland raised a record €105 million in funding in 2020. This week, Visa launched its new global programme, She's Next, empowered by Visa in Ireland, to support women-led small and independent businesses, many of which have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. Europe's inaugural She's Next programme will provide additional funding options for women business owners in Ireland, with the chance to apply for one of five grants totalling €25,000. In partnership with the go-to funding marketplace for women-owned businesses, iFundWomen, women entrepreneurs in Ireland across all industries and sectors are invited to apply for one of the five €5,000 grants. In a recent Visa study of small business owners in Ireland, the majority of women, 55%, said the past year has been a challenge for their businesses, while the majority of men at 52% stated it had been an opportunity. Gender inequality in entrepreneurship isn't a new phenomenon. In Ireland, there are nearly double the number of men for every woman who is an early stage entrepreneur, which is well above the average across the OECD. Applications are now open till the 2nd November 2021 at ifundwomen.com/visa Ireland. And the winning businesses will be also awarded mentorship and coaching from iFundWomen for 1 year to support them with moving their business forward. Women frequently are juggling growing a business, running or working in companies, while rearing a family in parallel. We need to look at why, when women take additional parental leave or career breaks, find it so difficult to get back into the workforce. How do we navigate the bias that exists in the recruitment process? The biggest barrier on return is not one's ability, it's confidence. We need more training which provides the comfort women need to feel confident again in their own capabilities, as well as external factors such as access to reasonable childcare and the cost of living. To be successful in the global economy of today and tomorrow, smart companies will need to make gender diversity a key component of their business strategy. As Junko Tabei, the first woman to reach the summit of Mount Everest, once said, "Technique and ability alone do not get you to the top. It is the willpower that is the most important."
Love the sounds there.
Great music, yeah. Thanks to Jenny there, celebrating National Women's Enterprise Day, which is today. Now, Dave, we're going to look at a story, a very interesting one, one that talks about firms are unlikely to be struck off for late returns. That's the tax returns, I presume, that's coming up at the...
Well, it's the CRO, yeah. It's the Company Registrations Office. Is continuing to grapple with a significant backlog of unprocessed annual returns. So that's where the problem lies.
Yeah.
It's unlikely that any firm will be struck off this year for failing to file an annual return on time. And even as the Company Registrations Office itself recommences enforcement actions following a suspension because of the pandemic, it told stakeholders recently that due to the number of steps involved in the enforcement proceedings, the likelihood is that no companies will be removed from the register before the end of the year. Now, the Irish Independent, this story came from, reported last month that the CRO is continuing to grapple with the backlog of unprocessed annual returns, with delays of up to 16 weeks before some documents are even reviewed. So it's fairly obviously building up there on sideboards and cupboards in people's houses or whatever they do. Yeah. The backlog has impacted 70,000 companies, are more than a third of those that submitted their paperwork between the start of the year and September. A new IT system that went live last year means that the annual returns office that are submitted are available online immediately once they are filed. So that bit of it is okay. So if people are looking for verification of their credit worthiness or otherwise, people can get that. So that's a very important and vital factor for companies seeking to trade with companies internationally or domestically.
Yeah.
Once they've filled out, they haven't been reviewed by the CRO, and they can go up on that. The stakeholder meeting last month noted that there was an upcoming filing deadline of the 25th of November for annual returns for companies with an annual return date of September 30th. It's anticipated that the peak will be smaller than we experienced in May and June, as this was an exceptional filing volume period and covering the ARDSs, that's the annual return dates for September 30th, right up to the end of March. And so they said the extremely high volume of companies filing in late May caused difficulties for the system, and a further 2 week extension was given as a result.
Brilliant. There you go. Yeah, it's interesting that their firms won't get into trouble, but it's actually the problem seems to be at the
it's just jamming through all the stuff trying to get it done. But it's a very important function of business, that organisation, and they're fairly strict, you know, about things, as they would have to be, you know, getting things going and keeping everything in order, because you can't have it messing, you know.
Absolutely. No messing at all.
Sit down at the back there.
Sit down at the back. Well, look, at that's brilliant. Coming up in the second part of the show, Dave, we've got two interesting conversations. The first, you're going to talk to Ronan Crinion from movehome.ie, And Ronan always has a great look at what's happening in the local property market here on the north side. He'll be here just after the next break. And after that, then, before we finish up, we will have David Bell for our usual look at HR issues. David from the HR department. And this week we look at different management styles and how they can affect a company's performance. As we see in a couple of moments.
90.3. This is Near FM.
And welcome back.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
And don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion, well, you can do so at any time. Or if you want to comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or indeed, you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
Now, every quarter, we get an update on the latest in the local property market here in North Dublin. So that means Ronan Crinian from Move Home Estate Agents from Drumcondra and Capel Street is on the line. Good evening, Ronan. How are you?
Not too bad at all, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm great. And firstly, I'm going to talk to you, ask you, how's the new shop getting on? You opened on there at the Grattan Bridge, is it? And is that what it's called?
It is. That's where it's located, right on the corner. Okay. And it was vacant for the last 25 years. We got the keys exactly 51 weeks ago. We refurbished it, but sadly Dublin City Council have served a notice on my landlord, and it's gone to On Board Planola because there's an issue with the width of the door for wheelchair access.
Oh,
it's only minor, but my I'm waiting on a result from On Board Planola. So I'm hoping to open it over the next few weeks, which is the honest answer.
Very good. So I'm looking forward to that. And we see your lovely window always, as we mentioned. And I'm sure it's all autumnal at the moment, coming up to Halloween with pumpkins and whatnot.
I did it the other night, Dave.
Very good.
It's all set, please God. And I think Halloween is early for us this year.
Yeah, a little bit earlier, I think, the way things are going. And just let's talk a little bit about the property market. We can't turn on the radio, open the newspaper, or listen to people talking. We're hearing about homelessness, we're hearing about lack of availability and all. How's it on the ground?
We've never experienced anything like this before. We've just had a lockdown lift since June, and the market was quite cautious then in June and July. We were expecting to be more activity, yet there wasn't, Dave, to be honest, because a lot of people wanted to get their vaccine and see family members after a long lockup or lockdown, and then the market became active then in August. Right, but all us auctioneers, particularly on the north side of the city, expected a heavier supply of properties, but that hasn't happened yet. An awful lot of people are holding off and going to hold off to the new year to put their properties on the market.
So lack of supply means price increase, I'm sure. Prices are gone up.
A lot of people, all right, are. Yes, they have gone up. They've gone up in Dublin, and I think I was correct last year with my gauge of about like 6 to 7%. I think it would be quite similar this year, right, because of the shortage of supply. However, there is, it's unusual that the only properties now that are on the market that there's a lot of activity in are the ones that are in excellent condition, Dave, because there's an issue of getting building works done and refurbishment because there's a supply chain issue, again, down to the COVID issues with and Brexit, etc., coming through here. So supply for building materials is a huge problem on all of our desks at the moment.
So in the commercial side of things then, how you mentioned your own situation there, but it's just a little small issue that you have in planning. But just on the commercial side of business, with people, the horse box, I'm sure, is the big one. You can't get a horse box, I'm sure, to put a horse in now because there's so many people selling coffee out of them. But how is the commercial side and with restaurants and shops generally going on?
It's talking to an awful lot of commercial fellow traders, both in Drumcondra and in Capel Street, all right, on a daily basis, because I walk by the streets and stop and chat to fellow traders. And they're finding that footfall is a lot lower earlier in the week.
Right.
And it's only active towards the weekend, which isn't enough to pay them and pay them and their rents.
Yeah.
And they're just concerned for this Christmas because they only have a small window of opportunity to gain enough income to keep them going into the new year. And if people are going to be buying online and not shopping local, I think that's going to have a devastating effect on the retail market.
Yeah.
So I would be strongly advising us all in every area in the city to support local as much as they can.
Yeah.
Buy like in your local stores or buy in town or put the money into Irish businesses, because the next couple of months are going to be a deciding factor for retail.
Very important. Yeah, a lot of things happening in socially because of the last year and a half. Things like people only buying online, not going into town, not going, you know, the old thing of going into town and having an afternoon shopping and actually looking at the things and picking them up and rather than sitting at your laptop and ordering stuff, and then you can send it back free and all this thing. So it's very easy for people to buy, but it is nice to go to the local hardware and get yourself a brush handle or whatever you need to get, and even, you know, local clothes shops and florists and places like that. It is important
it is.
To keep them going. Yeah,
it is. And you know what, Dave, we've a very high percentage of vaccine rate, and people have the vaccine, so it is an awful lot safer to get out in the street, and you can put the masks on when you go into a store. But it's a lot better to see items in the flesh and see the colour of them, as opposed to buying them online. I have a great girl that works with me, and I just complimented her beautiful green jacket, and I said that makes, because it looks really, really well. And she said, "But you know what, Ronan?" She said, "I bought it online, and this was the wrong colour that they sent me. I ordered a different colour, but when I put it on, I liked it." So it's sometimes better to buy off the peg.
Yeah, just in terms of, we hear a lot about landlords and the homeless crisis and all that sort of thing going on at the moment. In terms of the availability of rental properties, that's another sort of minefield right now.
It is, Dave. It's a very, very, very serious issue because there's a lack of supply again, and the rents have increased, which has surprised many of us in the business, and an awful lot of people then aren't moving. Okay, so it's not relative, and what we're wondering is, will it just like improve and level off in the new year? But there is a strong shortage of supply currently at the moment. So for people on social welfare and on HAP, it's a challenge for them as well as other people. Okay, so across the board, the market for lettings is facing a difficulty of supply.
Now, the local property tax is back again. It's raised its ugly head, and I don't mind saying that. We were valued in 2014, 2012 to 14 previously, and they
Correct.
Kind of stumbled over the line, and they got it up and running, and it's there, and people are paying the amount, and it's collected by the revenue, so it's totally collectible. It wasn't like the water charges, which they flaked on in the end. But what's going to happen there for most ordinary people who live in a three-bedroom house or four-bedroom house in suburban Dublin?
Well, if they live in an estate, okay, and they live in a three-bedroom, beautiful fixed abode in an estate, they will have a very clear indication of the market value of the property. And let's say they're going for around 400,000, all right, I'm just going to pick a figure out of the sky. They can value it, all right, at 400,000 in that bracket, or they can go apparently one less, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is category X, okay, they can go within one, which would be category Y, all right. I'm dealing with a valuation of an estate in Gaeltacht Park in Whitehall, and the market value of the properties there are around, would say, late fours up to 550,000, maybe 600,000. But the category is up to 525, and then it goes up to 625. So if you were valued at 600,000, you can go just one category below, but not more. And you have to then provide proof if that is requested by revenue.
So there are new bans been issued for the categories, and it definitely it sounds then that most people's going to have an increase here from the previous.
I can't comment on that, to be
okay,
honest with you,
yeah.
Dave, because I don't know what they've registered before.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
But the market value of the properties have increased since, would say, 2014, 2015, and I analyse it on a yearly basis. However, it levelled off in 2019, and it's gone up slightly in 2020 for last year, right, by about 7 or 8%. And we're watching then on a monthly basis how 2021 is doing. So for your listeners that have to register their property for the tax, they should be realistic and be they can't be too conservative and undervalue their property. They will know the market value of the properties in their estate, or nearby them, so they will be able to gauge. And if they want any advice or any assistance, I would be very, very happy to give them advice over the phone, and they can contact me directly, and I will talk them through it. And my team is prepared to do that for the next 3 weeks.
That's what I'm saying to you. Do people have to contact a valuer to get the value there? Will they talk to their neighbour over the hedge, or what is it, the one that sold on the corner last? Or how you know, if people, anything to do with this kind of thing, you know, officialdom and all that gives people the willies, you know what I mean? They get frightened and so on. So is it incumbent on someone to engage an actual valuer to get this done, or
it's not? No, you don't need to. All right, you should. Everyone should know the market value of their property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they should know it within about a 10-15% price bracket.
Okay,
off the record, everyone overvalues their property when they're thinking of selling it.
Yes,
they always think because their garden is this or that, or their off-street parking is a benefit, so they think they'll get more. However, when it's for tax reasons, we immediately switch and we become negative. And that's just in our blood. So what I would say to your listeners is just be cautious, but be realistic.
Yes.
And if you are being cautious and conservative, don't go lower than one stage below the market value.
Yeah.
And you, as people, will know the value of your home. But again, if any of your listeners need any help or assistance, they can email us at info@movehome.ie or call us in the office, and we will talk them through what they should do and the market value of the property. We can give verbally over the phone, and there won't be any calls for
just it. One final question from me on this. Second, I know, has something for you there. Just if Mrs. Murphy across the road has exactly the same house as me, and she has a little extension on it, and she has the good windows, would that come into a play in terms of valuing the house, or for purposes of purpose?
Not really, no. It won't, okay? Because they'll be looking at just the size overall, and they'll be looking at the condition overall. So if both properties are habitable, or just because she has beautiful curtains and you have blinds, etc., that doesn't make too much of a difference,
okay?
All right? It's the same road, or it's the same cul-de-sac, and the market value will be quite similar. So if hers is in a bracket of 500 to 550, and you're in a lower bracket of 450 to 500, I'm getting the impression from revenue that they won't have an issue as long as you're within one band.
Yeah. Declan has something there for you.
Yeah, hi, Ronan.
Okay,
just before before we finish up.
Hi, Declan.
Hiya. At the start of the conversation with Dave there, you just mentioned about, you know, the lack of supply in the market. Is there anything that you and your fellow people in your business can do to help people to bring the property to market, you know, to help you to solve that supply issue?
The only thing I think they can do, Declan, is, and it's probably too late in the year for them now, right, because the market does, it's like a large volume clock. It winds down at this time of the year, October into November, and then it goes really low in December. But then, as I always say, over Christmas, people make up their minds to decide and move and get out of the house or move to a bigger one or a smaller one. Those decisions are made over Christmas. So then the market resumes again in January. So I don't think there is going to be an adequate supply for this last quarter, which we've just entered. So I think we're all going to have to wait until the new year, and I think then things are going to resume back to a normality of supply, and people will start to move again. So there'll be more stock for people to buy, but I don't think anything can be solved in the short term, Declan.
Yeah. Okay.
Just another question. Declan's next piece with David Bell is about sartorial elegance in the workplace. Is it not? No.
It's about, well, we did a lot of that last week, but it's more about the style of the management and whether they're, you know, cross people or
okay.
or happy people.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, I thought that's what it was. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, has your market, just while I'm talking to you there, has your attire changed throughout the pandemic, or do you still dress your brand?
We still dress our brand. We're changing our brand, okay? We have a brilliant designer, and that's going to change, okay? Because we had all the time to think. But we are, we've got a brand new, like we say, font, and it's easier on the eye. and it's more recognisable. So I'm just changing slightly. And then we've introduced the internal changes. But I still have the same team. I only lost one member, so I still have eight. So we all survived the lockdown, and it was great.
Listen, okay, thank you very much. You're a fountain of knowledge, as always. And thanks very much for your wise words. And a pleasure to listen to you. And thank you very much, Ronan Crinian from movehome.ie.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
I'm joined again now by David Bell from the HR department for our regular look at HR issues. David, this evening we're going to talk about management styles, the different types of management styles out there, I suppose, and how they can affect staff and staff morale, and how they can affect business performance as well. Is there a typical style that you see nowadays, David, in the course of your work? Or has that, I suppose, you know, evolved over the years?
Well, I think it's probably evolved. I think there's a lot more focus on management training and support for people who are either, you know, developing into a role as part of their overall development within work, or whether they're appointed into a role and need some help, because it is something that doesn't come natural to everyone. There's probably people that you've either worked with or worked for or have come across that you would look at and say, you know, that from a manager's perspective, their style or their way of going about things is something to be admired, and they get a lot of, good results from people. There's obviously managers in the sporting arena, probably most of us are familiar with, who you would look at, and certainly if you are to measure it by success, would be seen as very good managers. But you know, I think it can be, there's no doubt it can be taught, but there are some people who, you know, just naturally have a way about them, and, you know, they become that type of leader or manager that people will respond well to. And I think what we're trying to get at here is that, you know, there are different styles of personality, there's no question about it, and sometimes that can be useful in a management style. Be that someone that's, you know, very robust and, you know, more the sort of the army sergeant type, encouraging, but in a sort of a go-getter, big thinker type way. And that can be very useful if people react to that. But then there are other types as well. And it's just trying to get that balance, as I said, with sort of support and training. People are naturally do things, but generally that's either learned from someone else or if there's some sort of training required. But it's really just to examine the different styles and some of the pros and cons of those styles.
And that style can have a big impact really on the employees in the business and, you know, the overall company morale as well. So I suppose it's important to know yourself, if you like, if you know what I mean, in the sense that if you're leading the business or a manager of the business, you have to know your own style and understand that as well.
Absolutely. I think that's the first thing you would say. So try and figure out, as I said, you know, are you an encourager? Are you someone who stands back and lets people make mistakes? Are you a sort of a quasi micromanager? Are you very much into the detail, quite by the book, and expect others to operate like that? So definitely the first thing, if you are looking at your management style, is to try and get some understanding of what that style is and what people think of it. That could be, you know, I suppose friends and family, or it could be your colleagues, or it could be some of the staff that you manage, just to get some idea what it is. And obviously then try and identify what the positives are and what the negatives are. And that's, I suppose, again, in this world of frank exchanges and transparency, a lot of the performance reviews and items like that we deal with will often have a sort of a 360 element to it. So not to be critical of people, but it is to point out, you know, the good and bad, I suppose, from staff on someone's style. So definitely, I think, is understanding how you're perceived in terms of your management style.
Yeah, and that 360 review that you mentioned there, I think, is very important, because it looks at it from all angles. You know, usually within a business, you know, the boss will have a boss somewhere along the way. So they will have a view of your management style,
your peers, maybe at a similar level in different departments, and obviously the people that are working on your team or whatever. So it's very useful. But if you've got a person, David, in their own business and they don't have that available to them in terms of, you know, that 360, it's more difficult for them. But I'm sure there are things they can do.
Yeah, again, I think even simple sort of, sort of anonymized surveys, or they can, you know, anything that gives you some, and again, I suppose this is slightly predicated, Declan, on the basis that there might be some issues, and this is what's causing people to question.
Yeah.
One of the big challenges, I suppose, is that in the same way, no, everyone's different when you're coming from a managerial perspective. A lot of people are different in the staff perspective. So some people react better to certain styles than others. And I think a good manager, certainly the ones that I've ever worked with, could adapt themselves in that respect. And so it's slightly different, but in the sense that, you know, they can identify where certain individuals respond to certain things. Others may respond to a slightly different approach. So whilst, you know, it is useful to know your style, get your feedback, and try and understand what you're like, I think also you should be looking at ways of, you know, changing a style perhaps to suit other individuals who may work with you or work for you in that case. So that's also something to bear in mind. I think that one size doesn't necessarily fit all. You might have a style that could be your normal style, but also it is important to look and see what other things you can do and how you can adapt that style to suit other employees.
Yeah, that's important. A very good point that, you know, the people that's working for you will all be coming from different viewpoints probably, and will be motivated by different things as well. I mean, if you need to adapt your style and, you know, change it for those different people, I'm sure there's plenty of help as well you can get in that arena, maybe even from someone like yourself.
Yeah, but I think, look, management training is now a massive industry. As I said, you know, a lot of times people are promoted to being a manager for different reasons. Some because they have shown initiative, or they have progressed in a certain way through an organization and showed the skills that are required. Sometimes it's not as scientific or any way remotely related to that. And you know, very often people are put in a managerial role and, you know, genuinely don't know the first thing. They go with the flow and see how it works. And very often, particularly if someone has been, I think where we see a lot of challenges where someone has been promoted. So if they have worked with a group of people and they have been promoted, which may give rise to them being, you know, in a senior position to those, I suppose, ostensibly colleagues and often friends, that's a big challenge for people. The how to adapt that and how to, you know, be able to maintain some relationship, but at the same time, you know, earn the respect or get the gravitas that's required to manage. So that's something that we would often help people with in that transitional phase. And that's certainly part of what we've discussed, is how we would go about that. Learn your style, try and identify what others think of it, and certainly give yourself room to be flexible and adapt for different people, different colleagues and different staff, and not just stick to one style.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. We're all different, and we will all have slightly different styles, I'm sure, no matter what we might you know, gain through experience or through the various leadership and management programs that are out there. It's you know, there was a time maybe when being a manager was just about a little bit of delegation and, I suppose, making sure the job was done. It's a little bit more complex than that now.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, the, you know, we've talked a number of times over the years about the different expectations in the workplace. And it's not to be, again, very difficult to be so general, but, you know, the days of, you're lucky to have a job and just keep the head down and do your job and everything be okay, I think have moved on. I think the expectations of staff in terms of their career, the way they're treated, the way they're dealt with, has put a huge amount of pressure and emphasis on managers, and I certainly, yeah, absolutely, it's a lot more complex trying to retain staff. As we all know, we're reading the papers every day, the great resignation or the great reset, call it what you wish, there seems to be a lot of movement, a lot of things happening. So keeping staff happy and keeping your important staff within the company, they're all certainly, as time changes and as I said, we go back to some sort of normality, that seems to be a trend that's happening. And that's a huge challenge for managers, of course. So all will be tested, but you're absolutely right. I think it is a much more complex situation than it might have been in the past.
Yeah, and nonetheless, an important one to get right. You know, whether you're a manager of your own business, just with, you know, one manager in the business effectively and a small number of staff, or whether you've a more complex setup and organisation, making sure the management are doing the job properly and making sure that the staff are responding to that can have a massive impact on overall morale, as I said, but maybe more importantly, from a pure business point of view, can have a big impact on productivity or even overall income and revenue generated as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's spot on. And as I said, I think it does require a lot of work and a lot of thought now than perhaps than in the past. And certainly, everyone in that position needs to be able to reflect and change if needs be, either on a sort of individual basis or just in general, because, just because it's been done for a period of time doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. And I think a lot of people are aware now that they need to be able to develop themselves and not just, as I said, that my way or the highway approach. And if you don't like it, you can up it. And again, I'm being a bit simplistic, but that's still, some people still have that view. And I think, generally you find that they don't hang on to their staff for too long because it's just not really appropriate, I suppose, in the modern workplace. Yep. A lot of people need to be a lot more flexible and adaptable and manage in the correct way.
Absolutely. Well, as usual, David, thanks a million for talking to me this evening and having a look at that interesting topic of management styles and how it can affect staff morale and, I suppose, overall business as well. Thanks a million, David.
Thanks, Declan.
AOB on Nearby Business.
Well, Dave, probably just time to squeeze in some Any Other Business. Now, I thought it was a frightening story when I heard the headline, but maybe it's not as bad as it looks. The NTMA Rainy Day Fund is empty. That means the money that we'd saved up for a rainy day in Ireland is all gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's it gone?
Do you remember that Rainy Day Fund?
Where's
well,
it gone?
The country's Rainy Day Fund is empty. The Public Accounts Committee are here today. Its Chief Executive, Conor O'Kelly, said that the fund stood at its peak at $1.5 billion. However, all the money was used during the pandemic. So that was a rainy day if ever there was one, I'm sure.
Sure it was.
There's no funds in the fund as you speak.
No fun in the funds?
No funds in the rainy day fund. So he was doing a bit of poetry there. And Mr. Kay said the NTMA oversaw loans to Aer Lingus for $150 million during the pandemic as it talks to the airline to see if it can be any more assistance. So they were grounded, of course.
And Michael O'Leary would be happy to hear that.
Yeah, well, there's probably a few issues there, but it's still partly owned by the state. Or, is it a little bit, I think, wasn't it sold off to the International Aviation Group? So I don't know the ins and outs of that, to be honest with you, for sure. And they also loaned money to Dublin and Cork Airports operator, DAA. They got $40 million. So these were essential services, I suppose you could call them, that they had to keep going. Yeah. He told the committee that Ireland borrowed just under $36 billion since the start of the pandemic at an average interest rate of 0.16%. Bond buying by the European Central Bank has been extraordinary and is at a rate of almost 1-for-1, he said. This has allowed Ireland to borrow so much, so cheaply, so effectively. Ireland has one of the longest maturities in Europe at just under 11 years and there are no funding cliffs, he added. So that means they're going to have to run out of money and jump off the edge. The Comptroller and Auditor General told the committee the national debt in 2020 was, ladies and gentlemen, can we have a drum roll? $219.5 billion, up $12.75 billion, or 6% on the 2019 figure. However, the cost of servicing debt continued to fall in 2020 due to refinancing. It cost $4.7 billion, half a billion euro less than 2019. So there you go.
There you go. It's all monopoly money, isn't it?
Indeed. In and out.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of Nearby Business. And thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. And we'll both be back live here next Thursday at 6 p.m. Dave.
Yeah, and as it's budget week on budget week next week on Tuesday, we'll have the budget. Alan McQuaid, our resident economist, will join us on Nearby Business at 6:30 on Thursday. Looking forward to that. In the meantime, don't forget, if you have an idea or you'd like to discuss with us, or get in touch on Twitter anytime you can at @nearby_business #localbiz. So from me, Dave Daly,
and myself, Declan Ralph, bye for now. We'll see you soon on the radio. Bye bye. Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Doyle to Beaumont.
Community Radio for Northeast Dublin. 90.3 Near FM.